In a world obsessed with noise, Penelope Douglas's Credence whispers its way into readers' hearts with its raw exploration of broken people finding wholeness in each other. Published in 2020, this dark romance quickly became a TikTok sensation, with readers captivated by its exploration of taboo relationships and emotional healing. The novel's controversial themes sparked heated debates among romance readers, with some praising its unflinching portrayal of complex desires while others questioned its boundaries. Despite, or perhaps because of, its provocative nature, Credence has maintained a cult following, particularly among readers drawn to stories that challenge conventional relationship dynamics. As one celebrity fan noted, it's like watching a beautiful train wreck you can't look away from, and somehow, by the end, you're cheering for everyone aboard. Tiernan DeHaas stands alone in her parents' sprawling Californian mansion, a Mediterranean-style estate in Beverly Hills where wealth drips from every crystal chandelier and marble surface. Police and paramedics move through the house with practiced efficiency, their radios crackling in hushed tones. Her mother and father lie dead upstairs, victims of a meticulously planned joint suicide pact following her father's terminal pancreatic cancer diagnosis. They chose their final moments with characteristic precision. Dressed in evening wear, her mother in Chanel, and her father in his favorite Tom Ford suit, found embracing on their king-sized bed. They'd thought of everything, putting their beloved German Shepherd in the garden, scheduling the housekeeper to arrive hours later, even canceling their standing dinner reservation at Spago. But they left no final words for their only daughter. This ultimate abandonment merely punctuates a lifetime of careful distances. While other children's memories overflow with bedtime stories and family dinners, Tiernan's childhood was orchestrated by a rotating cast of nannies and punctuated by terms at elite boarding schools. Her parents, her mother a former model, her father an entertainment industry mogul, occupied a glittering world that Tiernan could only observe from the periphery. She remembers countless nights spent at her bedroom window, watching them share wine and secrets in the garden below, laughing as they pushed each other on the old tire swing beneath the oak tree. It was a private magic show where she remained perpetually in the audience, never invited on stage. Even in death, they maintained this careful choreography of exclusion. As Tiernan navigates the aftermath alone, she faces an onslaught of well-meaning but suffocating attention. Society columnists speculate about the tragedy, family friends offer hollow condolences, and funeral directors speak in practiced, sympathetic tones. The Beverly Hills rumor mill churns with theories about the DeHaas fortune and Tiernan's inheritance. Just as the walls of her gilded cage begin to close in, a phone call breaks through her isolation. Her uncle Jake Vanderberg, her father's estranged stepbrother, reaches out from his home in the Colorado Rockies. He explains that since she's still 17, her parents' will names him as her guardian. His description of life in the mountains paints a stark contrast to her Los Angeles existence. He speaks of vast wilderness, working the land, and nights where the only sounds are wind through pine trees and distant waterfalls. Something in his gruff honesty and the promise of anonymity calls to the hollow space inside her. What do you do when the people meant to love you most leave you with nothing but designer clothes, a mansion full of memories, and an emptiness so vast it threatens to swallow you whole? For Tiernan, salvation might lie in the rugged Colorado mountains, among strangers who could become the family she never truly had, or who might shatter what little remains of her already broken heart. At the airport, Tiernan meets Jake Vanderberg, younger than expected, in his late 30s or early 40s, at least 10 years younger than her father. Their interaction is awkward, no hugs, just brief exchanges. When he comments that she looks like her mother, Tiernan drops her eyes. Though meant as a compliment, it never feels good, as if everyone sees her mother first, not her own identity with sandy blonde hair, gray eyes, and distinctive darker eyebrows. As they drive through the small town of Chapel Peak outside Telluride, Jake unexpectedly takes her to a candy store called Rebel's Pebbles. Despite her initial reluctance, she fills a bag with candy she once loved but gave up to please her mother. The store owner, Spencer, seems concerned about her staying on the peak, questioning Jake's ability to control someone named Caleb, one of his sons. After nearly an hour driving up winding mountain roads, they arrive at a large house with massive windows and sprawling decks, much nicer than the cabin Tiernan had imagined. Inside, she meets Noah, Jake's youngest son in his early 20s, who stares at her intently and offers her a beer, telling her she'll learn to like it since they drink a lot here. Jake shows her around, including a garage where a freshly killed deer hangs, part of their grow, catch, and kill lifestyle. When Tiernan asks if Jake hated her father, wondering if her presence will be uncomfortable, he responds cryptically, "I don't see your father when I look at you," adding that she doesn't need to call him uncle, since I'm not really anyway. Left alone in her bedroom, Tiernan realizes with unease that she doesn't know these people at all. She's traded one form of isolation for another, but this time with three rugged mountain men whose intentions remain unclear. The question lingers: has she escaped one prison only to enter another? As Tiernan settles into mountain life, the dynamics with each Vanderburg man grow increasingly complex. Jake alternates between gruff commands and unexpected moments of tenderness. Noah is friendly but harbors his own agenda. And then there's Caleb, the mysterious older brother who hasn't spoken since he was 4 years old. When Tiernan first encounters Caleb, he returns from hunting with blood covering his chest and a deer carcass slung over his shoulders. Their meeting quickly escalates to a frightening encounter where he pins her against a wall and kisses her aggressively until Noah intervenes, explaining, "She ain't a townie, she's family." Noah reveals that Caleb hasn't spoken since childhood, but offers little explanation. The mystery deepens when Jake shares a painful story from his own past, showing Tiernan an old Polaroid of himself as a young man with a beautiful, dark-haired girl named Flora. They met when Jake was 18 at his father's Napa Valley house. She was an immigrant who worked at a vineyard, and their families disapproved. With raw emotion, Jake reveals how Tiernan's parents orchestrated Flora's downfall. Her mother got Flora drunk, her father slept with her, then paid her to disappear. When Jake found Flora later, she refused to see him. A week after that, her sister called to tell him Flora had committed suicide. 6 hours later, Jake left home forever. This revelation helps Tiernan understand the estrangement between her father and Jake, but also raises questions about her own place in this family. Is she merely a reminder of past betrayals, or could she be a bridge to healing old wounds? The shadows of the past hang heavy over the mountain home, with each man carrying scars that shape their present behavior. As winter approaches and the mountain roads become impassable, Tiernan realizes she'll be trapped with these wounded souls until spring, for better or worse. As the first snowfall blankets the mountain, Tiernan's relationship with each Vanderburg man evolves in unexpected ways. With Jake, she finds herself drawn to his strength and authority, even as she rebels against his controlling nature. With Noah, she develops a playful friendship tinged with flirtation. But it's with the silent Caleb that she forms the most intriguing connection. Despite, or perhaps because of, his inability to speak, Caleb communicates through intense gazes, deliberate touches, and meaningful actions. When Tiernan has night terrors, it's Caleb who comes to comfort her, holding her until she calms. When local troublemakers threaten her at a bar, it's Caleb who defends her with violence that speaks volumes about his protective instincts. Noah eventually reveals the trauma behind Caleb's silence. When he was 4 years old, their mother abandoned him, locked in a car for 4 days. Left alone, hungry, cold, and terrified, something broke in Caleb. He stopped talking as his one form of control, punishing the world by withholding his voice. This revelation transforms Tiernan's understanding of Caleb. His silence isn't merely a quirk or disability, it's his armor against a world that failed him. In many ways, Tiernan recognizes herself in Caleb's defense mechanisms. While he refuses to speak, she has spent years refusing to feel, both of them protecting themselves from further hurt. "I'm not used to people," Tiernan confesses during an emotional breakdown. "They don't talk to me at home." The irony isn't lost on her. She's drawn to a man who doesn't speak after escaping parents who never spoke to her. Yet somehow, in Caleb's silence, she finds more genuine communication than in all the empty words her parents ever offered. When words fail, what remains? Touch, presence, action, the primal ways humans connected before language. In the absence of speech, Tiernan and Caleb develop a deeper understanding that transcends verbal communication. Their connection challenges our assumptions about what constitutes meaningful interaction and reminds us that sometimes the most profound communications occur in silence. As winter deepens and the mountain becomes completely isolated, the boundaries between Tiernan and the Vanderburg men blur in provocative ways. What begins as tension evolves into complex emotional and physical entanglements that challenge conventional relationship norms. Jake, despite being her guardian and significantly older, finds himself drawn to Tiernan in ways that both disturb and excite him. Their power dynamic shifts constantly. He attempts to maintain authority while she pushes back against his control. When they finally give in to their mutual attraction, it's with the understanding that their relationship defies easy categorization. Noah, closer to Tiernan's age but still her cousin by marriage, offers a different kind of connection, one based on friendship and shared experiences. He understands her in ways the others don't, yet his feelings also cross into romantic territory, creating a triangle of competing desires. Caleb's approach is the most primal, possessive, intense, and often frightening in its rawness. He communicates through touch what he cannot say in words, marking Tiernan as his, even as she forms connections with his father and brother. Rather than choosing a conventional path with one partner, Tiernan finds herself navigating relationships with all three men simultaneously. Each fulfills different needs. Jake provides protection and guidance. Noah offers friendship and understanding, while Caleb connects with her on a visceral level that defies explanation. These unconventional relationships force Tiernan to question societal norms and her own boundaries. What constitutes family? Can love exist in multiple forms simultaneously? Where is the line between healing connection and destructive codependence? The mountain's isolation creates a world where conventional rules seem distant and irrelevant. Cut off from society's judgment, Tiernan and the Vanderburgs create their own moral framework based on consent, honesty, and emotional authenticity rather than traditional relationship structures. This aspect of credence challenges readers to examine their own assumptions about relationships. While the novel doesn't present these boundary crossings as a model to emulate, it does ask us to consider whether some societal norms exist for valid, protective reasons or merely to constrain human connection into acceptable patterns. The central paradox of credence lies in how vulnerability becomes strength. Each character begins with defensive walls built from past trauma. Tiernan's emotional numbness, Jake's isolation on the mountain, Noah's superficial charm, and Caleb's literal silence. Yet it's only by lowering these defenses that they begin to heal. For Tiernan, the journey involves learning to express her needs after a lifetime of being ignored. When she finally breaks down in Jake's arms, admitting she doesn't know how to be part of a family, it's a breakthrough moment. Her tears represent not weakness, but the courage to acknowledge her pain after years of suppression. "I've been punishing myself over parents who never loved me," she realizes in a moment of clarity. This recognition allows her to stop seeking approval from those who withheld it and instead build connections with people who actually see her. Jake's vulnerability emerges when he shares the story of Flora, revealing the wound that has shaped his life. By opening up to Tiernan about his past, he takes the first step toward healing his relationship with his sons and creating a genuine family rather than just coexisting on the mountain. Noah's bravado masks his fear of abandonment. When he confesses his worries about what will happen when Tiernan leaves, suggesting desperate measures to keep her with them, he reveals the insecurity beneath his confident exterior. But it's Taleb's journey that most powerfully embodies this theme. His silence, once a shield, becomes a prison that prevents him from expressing his feelings for Tiernan. When she discovers his journals, dozens of books filled with his handwritten thoughts, she realizes he has a voice, just not one the world can hear. "Say something," she begs during a crucial confrontation, "or write something then. Tell me anything. Tell me you love me." His inability to communicate in that moment nearly costs him everything. The novel's climax hinges on whether Caleb can find his literal and metaphorical voice. When he finally speaks to Tiernan after weeks of practice, his first words are profound. "My home is where you are." This breakthrough represents not just the recovery of speech, but the courage to be vulnerable enough to love openly. Throughout Credence, the concept of home evolves from physical location to emotional belonging. The novel opens with Tiernan in her parents' mansion, a house that never felt like home despite its luxury. The mountain house initially represents escape rather than belonging, a place to hide rather than connect. As winter isolates them from the outside world, the physical confines of the mountain paradoxically create space for emotional expansion. The house transforms from a stranger's dwelling to a place of memory and meaning. Each room becomes associated with moments of connection. The kitchen where they share meals, the workshop where they create together, the bedrooms where they find comfort in each other. Beyond the main house, other spaces take on symbolic significance. Caleb's hidden fishing cabin represents both escape and authenticity, a place where he can be himself without judgment. The pond, where Tiernan swims alone, becomes a symbol of her growing independence and comfort with solitude. The barn, when it burns, tests their ability to protect what they built together. When Tiernan temporarily returns to California after the winter, she finds her parents' house emptier than before. Despite inheriting their wealth and property, she realizes that all the wealth means nothing without the life and family I found in Chapel Peak. Material comfort cannot compensate for emotional connection. The novel's resolution hinges on redefining home not as a place but as a relationship. "My home is where you are," Caleb tells Tiernan when he finally speaks. This declaration transforms home from a physical location to a portable concept that exists wherever loved ones gather. In the epilogue, set 5 years later, we see this concept fully realized. The family has expanded to include Tiernan and Caleb's son Griffin, and they're building their own house lower on the mountain, while still connected to Jake and Noah. Home has become flexible yet enduring, adapting to their evolving needs while maintaining the bonds that matter. This evolution reflects a universal truth. Home isn't defined by walls and roofs, but by the people with whom we share our lives. For those who grew up without this security, creating home becomes an act of courage and faith, believing that what was missing can still be built, that belonging is possible even after abandonment. The final thematic arc of Credence explores how trauma passes through generations and how that cycle can be broken. Each character enters the story carrying inherited wounds. Tiernan bears the emotional neglect of her parents, while the Vanderburg men carry the scars of their mother's abandonment and Jake's estrangement from his family. These patterns threaten to repeat themselves. Jake initially keeps emotional distance from his sons, echoing the detachment of his own father. Caleb's inability to communicate mirrors his mother's failure to express healthy love. Noah's fear of commitment reflects his experience of maternal abandonment. Tiernan's emotional numbness replicates her parents' inability to connect. The breakthrough comes when they recognize these patterns and consciously choose different paths. Jake begins actively engaging with his sons rather than merely providing for them. Noah suggests spreading his mother's ashes on the mountain, helping Caleb find closure with her memory. Tiernan decides to feel her grief rather than suppress it, allowing herself to be vulnerable despite the risk. Most significantly, Caleb breaks his decades-long silence to express his love for Tiernan, an act that symbolically ends the cycle of emotional withholding that damaged them all. By finding his voice, he ensures that the silence that defined his childhood won't continue into the next generation. The epilogue, showing their life 5 years later with their son Griffin, confirms this cycle breaking. Unlike Tiernan's parents, who kept her at a distance, Caleb and Tiernan are deeply involved in their son's life. Unlike Jake, who isolated his family on the mountain, they maintain connections while building their own space. Unlike Anna Lee, who abandoned her children, they create stability and presence. Griffin himself represents this new legacy, described as having sandy blonde hair and green eyes, a perfect blend of both parents. He physically embodies the integration of their separate histories into something new and hopeful. His name, while not explicitly explained, suggests both strength and mythological significance. A creature that is part eagle, part lion, representing the union of different natures into something powerful and unique. Through this resolution, Credence offers a hopeful message about inherited drama. While we cannot change our past, we can recognize its patterns and consciously create different futures. The wounds of one generation need not determine the happiness of the next. The title, Credence, takes on profound significance in the novel's final chapters. As Tiernan traces the tattoo on Caleb's neck, credence, meaning belief as to the truth of something, she contemplates what it means to believe in someone despite evidence suggesting you shouldn't. Each character requires a leap of faith from the others. Tiernan asks the Vanderbergs to see her as more than her parents' daughter. Jake needs his sons to believe he can be more than a distant provider. Noah seeks assurance that he won't be abandoned again. And Caleb, perhaps most of all, requires others to believe in the person behind his silence, to have credence in his capacity for love despite his inability to express it conventionally. This theme extends to self-belief as well. Tiernan must develop credence in her own worth independent of her parents' validation. Caleb must believe he can overcome his trauma to form meaningful connections. Jake must trust that opening his heart won't lead to another devastating loss. The novel suggests that redemption comes not from perfection, but from effort, from the willingness to try again after failure, to communicate after silence, to love after loss. When Caleb finally speaks to Tiernan, explaining he spent weeks practicing by reading aloud, it represents not just a personal victory, but a testament to the transformative power of being believed in. In the epilogue, we see this credence fully realized. The family has found healing through forgiveness and belief in each other's capacity for change. Even Anna Lee, the mother who abandoned her sons, receives a measure of redemption when Noah suggests spreading her ashes on the mountain, acknowledging her as part of their story without letting her failures define them. Perhaps the most powerful message of credence is that healing doesn't require perfect people or conventional paths. It requires only the willingness to believe that broken people can find wholeness together, that painful pasts don't determine future possibilities, and that love, in whatever form it takes, can bridge the silences that once seemed unbridgeable. As Tiernan reflects while tracing Caleb's tattoo, "I fell for someone who may never speak." Yet in that choice lies the novel's core truth, that sometimes the greatest acts of faith are believing in what others cannot yet express, seeing potential where others see only damage, and finding voice in the spaces between words.